Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Welcome back, everybody. It is the IT Babble podcast. It's been a great summer, but summer is over. I'm Patrick Hawley, and I am joined by, as always, by my excellent friend, Mr. Tony DePreto. Tony, how are things in South Korea?
Pretty good. I'm podcasting with a baby now, so that's a new thing.
Congratulations.
He might scream if the topics aren't good.
There's a pretty good chance he's going to scream then. Here in Indy, it's been raining all week, but the temperature went from 90 degrees down to 60 degrees in less than 24 hours. So I think it's pretty safe to say that summer is over here in Indianapolis, and we are full on getting into fall, which is fine by me. Anyway. So, obviously, school's back in session. We're going to talk about some goals that we might have for this year, talk about some new tech for this year that our schools might be looking at. And, of course, there is an Apple event happening in less than a week, and some things that we would like to see. And I have really only one thing I really want to see. But anyway, let's start off with.
I'm ready for that topic, Patrick. There's a lot I want to see.
Okay, I'm good. So school's back in session. Tony, how has the start of the school year been for you?
Well, it's been a little weird because I'm the high school vice principal this year and the director of technology, and I can't explain to you how incongruent those two jobs are. They don't line up in any way. So can you lead this after school meeting with the high school teachers? No, I cannot, because the only time I can meet with everyone who is not a teacher is after school. So it's coming together. Luckily, the high school isn't very big this year. It's only like 130 kids, but it's still like it's a little weird. This year everything, you know, when school starts, you're always worried, like, did I do this right? Did I do that right? Overall, I have to say, like, I've been doing the IT startup for a while. It started very smoothly, okay? Very smoothly. I did, like, a lot of stuff that I normally do. Like, I keep the Wi-Fi open for the first week of school. There's no security, basically. I mean, there's filters, but there's no sign-in or anything.
Yeah.
So that new kids can get on, and we have time to work through all the problems. And we have kids that, like, mothball their laptops over the summer, so when they open them up, they don't understand that because the computer's clock is so out of sync, it like can't do anything. You gotta like get into it with an administrative account, connect it to like Apple Time Server Asia or Microsoft Time Server Asia, and just let it sit for like a minute and then restart it and then run like 3 hours of updates on it. So that happens to a lot of BYOD kids, and just there's a lot of people coming back with new devices. So I'm normal and logical, and I'm like, look. Second week of school, we'll turn it on. First week, leave it open. So that happened. Nothing bad happened. No meltdowns. Everything went smoothly until.
I love it.
Okay. So the one thing that I do, I think a lot of people don't understand sometimes that people that work like in educational technology, they work as like you work with systems like PowerSchool. You learn how to do stuff like scheduling, and it's not that the schedule makes itself. I think a lot of people think the principal or somebody writes the schedule down on a piece of paper and you just punch it in. It doesn't work like that, especially with like course requests for students. And it's an educational process and a technology process. It's the perfect example of educational technology. So basically I'm in charge of like loading and launching schedules for all three schools. And the middle school schedule was completed back in June. And it was sent, and all the details were sent to the incoming middle school principal. It was sent to him in the spring, and then the planning was sent, and then the final schedule was set in June. And he was working out of the school, and I wasn't liaising directly with him. The head of the school was. So anyway, he got here, and he was like, you know, I looked over all this stuff, and it's just not good. Like, I don't, it's like, I don't like the way this feels. I want to make some changes. And basically it was like 3 months of work and it was just gone. And we had to find a way to like create a schedule for them in about 4 days.
Oh man. Oh my God.
And the only reason we were even able to do it was because a math teacher last year who was really worried about the math department being overloaded in terms of like contractual teaching requirements sat down and made a rough middle school schedule to plot out the math.
Oh.
And we used – and I remembered that she did it. And I called her on the phone. I'm like, are you back in the country? And she's like, oh, yeah, I'm back. I'm like, do you have that rough schedule that you made? And she's like, yeah, but that was just like a simulation. I'm like, I need it. So she literally brought it to my office and we used that to rebuild the structure inside of PowerSchool that would allow us to like reschedule all these students. Because she had done all the thing is you can't make a schedule until you know if you have enough people to cover the hours.
Yeah, of course.
Like that's number one. If anybody's like sitting there like trying to like make their schedules awesome, just remember, if you only have 8 hours in a day and one of those hours is lunch and you only have seven and you have classes that you want to deliver to the kids and each class takes an hour, that's pretty much your – like you got to know all of that and you have to make sure you've got enough people to do all that. And anyway, that was not fun, but we get that done. And then we did drop ad for kids for about 5 days overall. That was it. And I think it finished like – it's pretty successful. I haven't really heard the kids complaining. Like I don't think that they care. So I was a bit worried about that they would be upset because we actually kind of gave them like, hey, next year this is going to be your schedule. And then they came back and they were like, wait, that's not my schedule.
Yeah, it's completely different, Mr. DiPreto.
Surprise.
yeah, our school year started off very smoothly. I was super worried during the back to school week. We're a very small school, so our IT department is myself and two other people. And one of those other people came to me and they said, I'm resigning. I've got this other opportunity and I'd be kind of foolish not to take it. And so we started the year pretty much without her. And so we were down a person. I was kind of super worried. But no, we've been doing actually pretty well and no big surprises. Last year we had a water main break in the school, and within 15 minutes of the water main break, there was 3 inches of water in the main lobby. Awesome. Nothing like that. Everything's gone well. Scheduling's gone well. We're rolling out Chromebooks. We are taking our time rolling that out. Our students actually don't have them yet. Our fifth grade students are getting them this year, and they will not get them until middle of September is when.
Smart move.
Yep.
Smart move.
And what we've been doing is once a week, every week, they come to IT class instead of doing normal IT stuff. We give them their Chromebook and they log on to it and we teach them a little bit about the Chromebook. So we're just taking our time, rolling it out nice and smooth, nice and slow. And everything is going actually pretty well. Pretty well. So school's back. It's happy. I'm happy it's back. It's nice to have kids in the school. All summer it was kind of weird. It was just so quiet. It was odd, but. Now it's good. It's school's full. It's busy. It's alive. It's good again. So, Tony, what sort of goal? Do you have any goals for this year? Any goals that you want to achieve or anything you, I don't know, anything, whether it be, you know, hardware, infrastructure, educational, any sort of goals or hopes, perhaps even. We can even just put it as hopes.
My goal is to get the schedules done by April. That is my goal, and it's totally possible. And it, you know, every place is different. This school is on like on a bad cycle for scheduling. I'm noticing it. Everyone's waiting till the end for like, I understand it. I've seen this before. So it's like, we don't have 100% of the information that we need, so we want to wait, and that's what they're doing. But it's all a numbers game. And
yeah, it absolutely is.
It's like you don't have 100%, but you have 70%. And you have the same teachers and you have the same curriculum. So you can actually only change 20%. So you actually have everything you need to make your schedule. You can fill in what you're missing easily in the end. You can plan for it, put an open slot in there. Like, you know, some people don't make their schedules because they're still waiting for a teacher to join the school. You can make a fake teacher.
Oh, yeah.
And then they can join later. And then someone's like, well, yeah, but the teacher is going to want to, like, have some input. I'm like, that isn't true. That's not true. Teachers that might join a school, let's say that you're coming to my school and I recruit you in January for an August start.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm all for it.
If you have free time and if you're willing, because you're doing this for free, I'm not paying you, you can give me some feedback on the schedule. But a lot of teachers are like, it's fine. I'll come there the first year, and going into my second year, I'll work on it. And that's really how it is. Also, let's say that you have a team like in middle school or elementary. And they do a lot of team scheduling.
Yeah.
I was actually accused of not understanding that. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I understand that. They do a lot of team scheduling. But my point to this person was, you're adding one person to a 5-person team. The other 4 people are here. You're going to need to make your schedule.
Yeah.
Like, this one person's not going to show up with a revelation that changes it all. It's not going to be like that. So I'm like, again, that person that you're recruiting, they're busy. They have kids. They're working in another country on another time zone. So this is not going to happen. Like, I've tried 100 times to get people involved and stuff before they show up to school, because I think it's a good idea.
It's a great idea. But it's a great idea.
I think I've maybe had one person in a decade who is working with me back and forth on a regular basis to help get something ready before they come. And that was a guy who wanted to start a robotics program, and we needed to order a lot of robotics stuff, and it all had to be ordered by like February.
Oh, so it would get there in time for the next school year, right?
Yeah, and had he not, and we went back and forth like every couple days till this was done. But after it was done, he didn't message me again until he showed up. So, because he had a job, and he, you know, this is extra work for people. So
it's a,
I'm just,
yeah, for the people out there who don't know, like when you're moving from one job to another, it's a tremendous amount of work. Just the move is a lot of work on top of your regular schedule, which is also a lot of work. So yeah,
my goal, really, I just want to look at the scheduling, because I'm one of these people who believes that, like, you got to get your bases covered before you open the doors. And kids really just need a couple things. They need a teacher, a place to meet the teacher. They need a curriculum, and they need a schedule. They don't really need anything else.
Nope,
they just need those things.
That's right. That's right.
And you've got to be able to meet all those basic requirements before you can start school. And I don't like working on any of those requirements a week before kids arrive.
Well, yeah. It's good. Yeah. Let's see, some of our goals this year for me is, last year it was my first year at the school, so I was very much just learning systems and learning the school and getting to know the staff and the teachers and the parents and the administration. But this year, now that I feel very comfortable at my school, I want to start pushing into the classroom a little bit more. We have one IT teacher for kindergarten through grade 6. So that's a lot of work for her, and I want to do something to try to help alleviate her work. Her job is not just IT teacher, but also integration specialist, and it's tough. It's tough for her. So I think that the IT team can actually help meet with teachers and help work on some of their ed tech initiatives. I think that'd be good. That's one of our big goals this year, is to do that. And we have access to our curriculum maps, so there really is, and we have support from the administration, so there really is nothing holding us back. It's just a matter of finding time and getting it going. So yeah, it's our big goal, and that's it. That's it. We got some other goals, but you know, that's pretty much our big one for this year. So Tony, now comes the fun stuff.
Okay, good.
What new tech are you guys using this year at your school?
So I'm pushing more Chromebooks around to different areas, and I've been working, as you know, I started working with Amazon last year as just a normal plebe customer.
Yeah.
But I got so annoyed that I, in the summer when I was waiting for this baby to come, I contacted Amazon in Korea and was like, hey guys, what gives? Like, I was going through all these problems I was having. And I found out I was doing it all wrong, and they got in touch with me and they were like, look, we've been running a program like you're talking about for university in Korea so that the kids at the university can use Chromebooks, but also use things like AutoCAD and Photoshop and everything else. And they, we've got a cheaper way to do it.
Oh,
so it's called, last year I reviewed the Amazon Workspaces with Chromebook.
Yeah.
Right now what I'm looking at, it's called AppStream. Okay. It's Amazon AppStream. And this is the difference. First, when you sign up for AppStream, it's kind of cool. Like, you, if it's not available in your country, you can just switch your Amazon country to a country it's available. You'll just be charged in that country's currency. The U.S. doesn't have to worry about it. It's fine. Anyway, so I choose AppStream, and it virtualizes only applications. So it has an installer. So, like, let's say I'm on my Apple and I have a Windows installer. AppStream will let me load the Photoshop installer in. It will take my Photoshop, like, it's going to ask for your serial number, all that stuff. And then it's going to build a virtual instance of just that software. And then when you start the, when you start your, like, little Amazon app on your machine or on your iPad, it does, like, it works on all these things on your Chromebook, then it's just the apps available. So, like, what I'm thinking is Internet Explorer, Photoshop, and a couple of the programs we use in Steam. If I can get those working on Chromebooks through the App Stream, then we have a really cost-effective way to distribute those, and I can start telling kids that they can bring they can get Chromebooks for school. I'm still a huge fan of the Surface, but, like, I really want the kids to be at a lower price point for computers. That's what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's pretty exciting. Like, again, I'm just experimenting with this stuff, but I really want it to work.
Let me throw something out there. Okay. So our school does VEX Robotics, and the program they use is Robot C. It only works on Windows.
That's right.
So we could put Robot C on Amazon AppStream, and the kids on their Chromebook could just access it, open it up, and could do all of their programming for the robots right there.
That's right.
Oh, man.
And the thing with AppStream is it works with – so this is what I asked them. I'm like, look, one of the things I have is I, like, have some Roland equipment in the – Steam Room, and the issue we have even with the Apple software is, like, it has Apple software, but it's hard to configure the ports because there's no more USB ports.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you have to, like, configure it, because when you put the dongle adapters on these things, these computers, the equipment doesn't understand what it is. So they're like, no, like, with AppStream, you can basically configure your virtual ports in the AppStream. That's something I haven't tested yet. But basically, you can tell it, use the USB, use this, use that.
Because that's okay. And
now, AppStream has a free version. So you can try it out. But here's the warning. Until you go through the process of making sure that you have educational pricing, and you might have to go back and forth with Amazon support on this a couple times, because it's not clear. They haven't done a good job.
Yeah.
You've got to be careful, because the business pricing for this stuff is really high.
Yeah.
So you've got to get it down to where it's really cheap and it's basically predictable. So I was like, I need to know how much it's going to cost for, like, 100 students to use this for 10 hours a month. That's kind of the numbers you need. Like, 50 students, 10 hours a month, or 10 students, 100 hours a month. You need to, like, get that information down before you deploy. But, you know, it shouldn't be that bad for anything. I don't actually, you know, I don't want kids doing video editing necessarily on this stuff. We have iMacs they can do that on, but it's basically just so they can work on projects. And you can shut users down. Like, they have two types of directory management too. They have simple directory and they have like Active Directory. You, for a school, you need to go with simple directory because it needs to be cheaper free. If you try to use Microsoft Active Directory with Amazon, you have to pay like an enterprise license for that.
Oh yeah. So, and at our school, we have, because we're so small, we have very few uses of Active Directory left. We have very few. In fact, we're looking at maybe even phasing it out next summer completely, just be doing away with it. This sounds fantastic. This definitely sounds like something, because I looked into the Amazon Workspaces this summer to testing out this whole Vex robotics thing. And one problem I had was getting it to recognize the ports on my computer. That was a big problem, because with the robot, just like with Lego's robot, you have to plug the brick into the computer in order to transfer the program from the computer to the brick so it will do what it needs to do. But that's awesome. Man, that's awesome. I love this. Amazon AppStream. Sweet. I added, for those out there listening, check the show notes. There's a link to it in the show notes.
And if you can't get it working, let me know and I'm going to contact these guys here in Korea, because it might actually be easier, because they know I'm working on like a plan.
Yeah. I'm putting it in there. Contact Tony for support. Done. Awesome. Fantastic. What else you got? You got AppStream, anything else? Any new hardware or anything going?
Well, I think we're going to order Vex Robotics, actually, because there's a new problem now in Korea, and they're not going to allow any more Lego to be imported, so I'm not doing that anymore.
Yikes.
I don't really know. I think for me, like, I'm just kind of waiting. I know this year the thing is going to be people are going to come to me with, like, things they want. So I'm just kind of waiting. I think the PE department's going to have a big push for like tech that works outside. We've been trying to work on our network to expand it to cover like our outside space, but our outside space is huge. So like,
yeah, you guys are smart. Yeah, and that's hard too, because I imagine there are laws too about how
you can't just broadcast. I don't know. I think, you know, it's just years new of our school. I think I'm actually trying to get people to settle down a little bit and just work with all the stuff we put in place last year.
Nice.
So, but yeah, my personal focus is just continually working on this like BYOD improvement, because I think it's a big deal and I think I want to give students more options.
Oh yeah, for sure. And if you can make it to where a Chromebook is the clear choice. I mean, that's an inexpensive option for them and a reliable option. Chromebooks are easy to reset and secure.
I think most schools would rather pay for software and subscriptions than hardware. So
yeah, absolutely. I agree for sure. At our school, we're looking at a laser cutter. How about that?
Sweet.
Now,
sweet.
This isn't like industrial laser cutters, because I did look into that a little bit over the summer, and that requires ventilation, like a hood. And, you know, that's fine. We could probably make something work there, but if you don't have that ability for the ventilation, then you have to get these filters, and I guess some of the residue of the laser cutting the metal produces some sort of toxic gas. And so the filter would absorb this gas, or the hood, of course, would vent it out safely of the school. So, but this laser cutter we're looking at is actually kind of it's small. It's a desktop. It cuts like balsa wood. So we're not talking about a heavy duty laser cutter kind of a thing, but you can do a balsa wood or cardboard. And we have a new science teacher, and he is real into 3D printing and has been for a while. At his previous school, he said he would go around a room and he would literally break stuff. He'd be like, oh, wow, there's a handle. I'm going to rip this handle off this cabinet, and we're going to 3D print a replacement. And teams are going to 3D print, and we're going to use the best one. And, you know, so I think that's really cool. Somebody is trying to make it, and we've talked about this on the show, of course, making these projects real. You know, you're not just, oh, we're going to 3D print something to practice 3D printing. We have a problem. We need a solution. 3D printing is going to give us that solution. Boom. I think that's fantastic. So that's good. That's really good. And of course, we have Chromebooks this year. This is the first year for Chromebooks for us. And that's pretty good. You know what, Tony? I'm adding a topic real quick here. I'm doing now. Okay, there it is.
I'm gonna send you a link to something. Laser cutting is good, but like, you know, unless you have a huge one, you really can't cut very deep, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
And so I'm gonna put this in the notes. So at the MIT Fab Lab, especially for their teen program, they actually recommend these. And this is what we have. We have one of these, and it's a CNC machine. It's small. You can use it in any classroom, and you can put cardboard and balsa wood in it. But it will cut things out from a like an SVG file or Illustrator file. It will cut it out.
Now that is impressive, because the one we were looking at was it's called a Glowforge, and I'm putting the link there.
You don't need any ventilation. It's self-contained in a little thing. I mean, it's probably fine to like put it in something with a hood, just because there's going to be dust.
Yeah.
But so you can 3D print stuff and then put it in there, and it's got different cutting heads on it. Or you can not 3D print stuff and use this instead, because if you can cut it out of something instead of 3D printing it, it's faster, much faster.
Awesome. Man, that's sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can put like small wood in there, and it will actually cut out what you want. So it's a subtractive process, whereas 3D printing is an additive process. So it subtracts the material to make what you need.
Yeah.
And there's different models. We have a small one. I think we have the Mono Fab machine. It's at the one at the bottom, but all their stuff is pretty cool. Roland's a Japanese company. It's solid, and the Fab Lab uses their products for their Fab Team program.
Very cool. I like that. Roland, that's a good name to know.
And also from China, you can order a $50,000 to $100,000 laser cutter.
Shoo.
And and it can hold materials on the table up to 800 kilograms. So,
well, you know, Tony, that's interesting you bring up China. It is, because did you just see the news about Jack Ma?
No.
Jack Ma, who, for people out there, and a lot of people in the West probably have no idea who he is, but he started Alibaba, which is enormous. It is, it's hard for me to describe how large.
Yeah, you can't really explain it.
But I can explain that according to Forbes magazine, he's worth $40 billion. So that puts him, you know, in like top 10 of richest people in the world, probably. Well, he's resigning next week as the CEO of Alibaba. He'll stay on the board, but he's going to be more of a philanthropist, and his focus is going to be education.
Wow.
Yeah. So $40 billion back in educational advances, probably within China, mostly, I would think. But hey, if you're in China and you're looking for a big laser cutter, Tony knows the name. Ooh. Let's see. What else are we going to do? Chromebooks. Are we going to do anything else? We're trying to expand. Our VEX program is so popular that we have expanded it. And Tony, the VEX thing is a big deal in the States. It's a huge deal. I didn't know how big it was until I got here. But we now have an elementary school program. We had two teams in the middle school, and now we are expanding to four teams because it is so popular. And I have talked to some high schools around here, and they actually build, they actually fabricate their own robots. So VEX has like kits like Lego, but you know, really all you need is the programming software, which is very inexpensive. And then you just need the brick. But then you can build and fabricate all your own stuff. And it's pretty cool. He's like, yeah, some teams will, you know, they have to really think about what materials they want to use. You know, they could probably use wood because it's a lot lighter. And so their robots can move faster, but it may not be as durable. And so it's just very interesting that, you know, you're not just, you know, programming and using what the company gives you. You're actually, you know, fabricating your whole robot from scratch, which is pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Yeah. Pretty awesome.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to our next topic here. Apple event this week. I'm just going to start this one off. Here's what I want to see. Now, it's an iPhone event, so iPhone and the Apple Watch are going to take center stage. But I would love to see a MacBook Air. And this has been rumored for a while, but a MacBook Air, a Retina display MacBook Air alongside a regular MacBook Air without Retina display. And the non-Retina display MacBook Air be sold for $700. And then education pricing, $650 or $600. That's what I want. That's what I want.
That would be good. We need something.
Yeah, this $1,000 for this MacBook Air is ridiculous. And the MacBook, unless you're flying on a plane 4 times a week, is a silly investment, I think.
It is.
And well, not only the pros are way overpriced. Yeah.
Here, let me tell you what I want to see.
All right, let's hear it.
I want to see a laptop that doesn't break because dust gets under one of the keys. Okay.
You're dreaming, Tony. You're asking too much. Okay.
I have had 3 computers come into our little repair area this week, and it was literally because dust had gotten under or some dirt. I mean, these people aren't eating over their laptops or anything. It's just normal stuff, and the whole keyboard just stops working.
It's unbelievable.
We try to like blow it out with compressed air that usually works, but if it doesn't, you got to pop the key out and clean it. It's totally stupid. It's like it gets under the shift key and then the entire left side of the keyboard stops working. I've never seen anything like it. Normally the shift key would just stop working and you'd just be like, use the other one.
Yeah,
that would be good. And then this one kid I know, he sent his computer in 3 times to get a mainboard replaced in the last 6 months.
Wow.
And that's under Apple warranty. I'm just like, what's going on? I don't understand.
At what point do they just be like, you know what? Enough is enough. Here is a brand new computer. We're sending you a brand new computer.
Well, that's the problem. I think they used to do that. I don't think they're doing that anymore. And out of the box this year, we had 2 of 30 new MacBooks that just stopped working within the first 24 hours.
Weird. Totally weird.
I don't know. MacBook Airs, kids with MacBook Airs never seem to have any problems. So
it's the best laptop they've ever made, period. It could be the best laptop ever made. I mean, I know that's arguable, but holy smokes. These MacBook Pros they are so expensive. They are ridiculously expensive. And that touch bar, it's stupid.
It is.
It's just useless and stupid. We have the touch bar, and I have a super Mac fanboy that I work with, and he's like, yeah, that thing is total gimmick. He goes,
I'll tell you what would have been good for the touch bar is if it had an app that just did your stock market on it. That's the only good use for it.
Oh, yeah.
Like if you were a stock trader and you wanted to see the ticket like you were like in the 1980s and it could just go across a little screen in like red little like analog,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
numbers, that would have been awesome.
Yeah. The only time I've found it useful and I was using ScreenFlow and you can scrub. But even then I was like, man, this is so silly. I can just do this with my mouse and I can just scrub and I have even finer control than on the touch bar. Oh, it's so stupid.
Yeah. Oh. I do like the format of the iPad Pro. I hope if it needs to come down like $100 or $200 in price.
I did hear on the iPad Pro that Adobe is finally making a full version Photoshop just for the iPad Pro.
It'll be good. It's a good, it's actually a nice unit, but it's too expensive. It's, I mean, I would just buy a laptop.
Yeah, you can, yeah. And this is, this kind of leads in a little bit to our next one. Yeah, when you're, when you get a, because you can't get the iPad Pro without getting the Pencil. Well, the Pencil's $100. Okay, well, then I want the keyboard. Well, the keyboard's $170. And now when you're talking about, you're talking a $1,200 machine, you can get a lot of computing for $1,200.
Yeah.
A whole lot.
If you don't believe us, go to Lenovo.com.
Go to Lenovo. You know what? Look at the Dell XPS 13.
Yeah, Dell's that's an amazing machine.
That's incredible. That is awesome, an awesome machine. Or the HP Spectre. The HP Spectre, I think, is a little bit more expensive than that, and it is incredible. Yeah, the Lenovo Yoga 900 series. Those are great machines. Oh, and you can go with a smaller, same size screen. Same computing power, full with a Windows Surface Go.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the price on this. So 128 GB, 8 gigabytes of RAM, $549.
Yeah. Now that doesn't include a Pencil, and it doesn't include, which I think is so stupid. What they should just throw that in there. Be like, okay, you get the Pencil, you get the stylus, you get the keyboard, and the keyboard for people who've never used the Surface keyboard is really, really good. It's really good. I mean, it's solid. It works really well. It's responsive. It doesn't feel cramped. It's very nice. It's very, very nice. Yeah. So I mean, you can get a really good unit for around $800, $750, $800. But then again, it puts you up into some other types of computing. You know, you can get like a cheaper Dell or a Lenovo. So, but still, I mean, if you're comparing an iPad Pro or Windows Surface, take a look at the Surface Go. It may do everything you need it to do and be significantly cheaper. It's a very interesting computer, this Surface. I think.
Okay, so I'm doing this pricing here. The Surface, if you get the type cover black, it's $100.
$100, that's right.
But if you get the burgundy or platinum, it's $130.
Because it has that, because it's a different type of material, I believe.
Oh.
It's at Alcantara. They call it Alcantara, but it's like a fabric is what it is. It's kind of like a fabric. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. I don't think you, just get the regular one. The regular one, the black one is great. It feels good when you type on it. You used it for a whole summer, Tony, didn't you?
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, it's the same type of keyboard. Exact same type of keyboard.
And it comes with a stylus, right?
And it does not come with a stylus. That's the thing.
Oh, that's weird.
Now, I'm going to add... I don't know. Let's see. Yeah, we got a little bit of time. Do you mind if I bring up another computer real quick, Tony?
No, it's fine.
Okay, so 2 years ago... Lenovo released a yoga book. It's called the Yoga Book. And so it was like a laptop. But on the, you had the regular screen, it was a touch screen, but the bottom was not a keyboard, it was a screen. And a keyboard would kind of appear and you could type on that. So it was like $500. And it was really underpowered and didn't get good reviews at all. Anyway, but it was very interesting. A lot of people were very intrigued by it. Well, Lenovo has now released the Yoga Book 2, Tony. Have you heard? Have you seen this thing?
No.
Oh. It's very slick. So, but there is a trade-off here. So it comes with a stylus. It has a full HD screen, like it's a very nice screen. The keyboard part is not a screen like it was before. It is an e-ink display,
like a Kindle,
yeah. And they have haptic response for the keys, and the keys actually have a little animation to them. So it vibrates a little when you type, or you can hit a button. The keyboard disappears, and all of a sudden, it's a tablet, and you can draw on it. And it actually sees, you know, you can actually draw right on it. It's not like a Wacom tablet that you would plug into your computer where you draw on that and it shows up on the screen of the computer. It actually shows up right on the e-ink display.
Oh, crazy. I'm looking at it now.
Yeah. Yeah. And right now, you know, I'm sure they'll make a deal with Amazon where you can get your Kindle books on there. And honestly, though, people have been very the few people who have had hands on with it have been kind of impressed with it. But here's the trade off, Tony. It is $1,000. Phew.
Well, still though, I mean,
yeah,
it's got a lot of, like, I'm looking at this just drawing capability alone. I mean,
or note taking.
That's pretty huge.
Yeah.
Or note taking. That's pretty huge.
Yeah.
You're saying it's $1,000. I was looking at, you know, Apple products overseas tend to be more expensive, whereas Windows products or, you know, Lenovo and stuff, they're the same. So right now I got pricing for some iPad Pros. I was looking at them for something very specific and they were like $900. I mean, $100 more for like an actual machine.
Wow.
Do you see what I mean? Like it doesn't. We're already there. When you buy an Apple computer or an Apple iPad at $850, you spent $1,000 because you're going to buy accessories.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that's what Apple knows. They know that they can't sell you a $1,000 computer as a tablet, but they know they can sell you an $800 tablet and then make you turn it into a computer for $200 more.
Oh, I hate that business model.
That's
I hate it.
That's it. That is the model.
I hate it though. It's you know, it's like buying an iPhone. I want to plug my headphones into it. Oh, I need an adapter.
And you know, I guess stupid. The worst thing is like you and I are informed because we've been doing this stuff for like over like people are always like, I'm really stupid. I don't know anything about technology. And I'm like, you're not really stupid. I've been doing this as my job for over a decade.
Yeah.
You have no reason. You have no reason at all to know what I know. And what bothers me the most is that person might be a teacher in a small school, get some money, get a grant, and they want to go buy something. They have no idea what they're getting into. It's not clear. They spend all their grant money and then all the equipment comes in and they can't really utilize it. And they don't have any more money. And then they have to borrow from Peter to pay Paul, so to speak. And that's what's bad. Like for schools that are big, that have infrastructure, that have people to do research, that have an IT department, that have vendors who they've been working with for a long time and those vendors will like watch their backs, that's fine. These problems don't happen. But for small schools or people who are just looking to do something different or really change the learning experience, but they've got tight budgets or they're new and they just like want to do something positive, those people are just like in the water with sharks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll say a real quick story. We got a brand new soundboard this summer for our theater, a digital soundboard. And I did some research and I went and shopped around and I talked to one company and they put together a quote for us and they're like, oh yeah, we'll give you a new soundboard for $12,000. And I'm like, no, I said, I know what soundboard that is. And I said, we don't need that. We are a small theater. This soundboard for two, he's like, there's no way you can pay $2,000 and get a soundboard. And I brought it up and it was actually the same brand, the same company of the soundboard that he wanted to sell us. And he's like, Oh, well, maybe that might work, but I was like, no, this is what we want. And obviously we didn't go with that one, but yeah, it's for people who had no idea. They're gonna buy a $12,000 soundboard. You know, they just don't. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. It's tough out there, people. It's tough. It's tough. And I'm gonna get the link for the Microsoft Surface Go. I'm just going to put a link from the store.
Do it.
Yep, I'm doing it, and it is.
Well, I'm looking at getting the Surface like approved, like as a BYOD option for our kids from like the start of next year. Like, I mean, from 2019, like not all next year. I just haven't had any experience with the Windows S, and I'm worried. I just don't know what the limitation is.
You got to turn it off, man. That's what the limitation is. And I'll tell you why. It's just because So you guys use Google, right? So you're going to want to use Chrome. Well, you can't install Chrome under Windows S. It will not allow it.
Okay. It so they need a normal Surface then.
But with the Surface Go, and with the Surface Go, which comes with... So they've changed Windows S from its own operating system to a feature, and you can switch it off.
Oh, okay.
It didn't used to be that way, but it is now, because so many people complained about it.
Do you have to spend any extra money, or you just switch it off?
I think you can just switch it off, from what I understand.
Oh, so if kids get in trouble, we can turn it on.
You could. Yeah, I guess you could, yeah.
I'm just kidding. I'm kind of not.
Or you actually could. All right. Anyway, we started off with just four topics and we ended up with six. And we're doing good on time. I don't have anything else. Tony, do you have anything else? I see a couple links that you put on here, but we can move those around.
Oh no, that's just for your reference. We don't have to talk about this.
All right, cool. Yeah.
Just to mention some Fab Lab team programs. They're just worth looking into. They have a curriculum that kind of comes out of the MIT Fab Lab, and if there's one offered around you, kids can just go there like on a weekend and do different courses, and they're really good.
That's awesome.
It's not free, but they're very affordable, and it's a good time.
Very cool. I'll leave that in the show notes as an FYI. I put that, you know, put that at the bottom there.
I don't have anything big. Next podcast, I'm writing a blog right now about my 6th year working in boarding schools and with technology for kids that live on campus. So I don't know if it's going to be super exciting, but I'm going to put that out in Thai, and then I'll probably cross post it on IT Babel.
Sweet.
And then I've been reading some rants in a forum about schools blocking Gmail, so I'm going to get into that a little bit. Maybe write something on IT Babel just about that.
Like, wow.
We're blocking Gmail. I was like,
why?
What's going on?
Yeah, well, I'm curious to hear about that. I've never heard about that.
So I've got to reach out. So I found the guy that started the thread. I'm just going to email him and be like, hey, man, why are you blocking Gmail?
I want to know, too. Facebook,
I want to know.
Twitter, like, Instagram, I get that, but...
We're blocking Gmail. Like,
Gmail?
Last 48 hours, there's like 5 or 6 people going back and forth about this. And they're like, yeah, these people are doing it at the county level. They're not doing it at the school level.
Wow.
So that means that it's blocking. They're blocking it for lots of schools. So I want to figure out what's going on. Why are you blocking Gmail?
Yeah, please.
And what are you using? Like, what's going on?
I don't know. That's odd. Anyway.
One guy wrote, we're a Google Apps school, and we're also blocking Gmail.
Okay. Are they, you know, here's what I'm thinking, that they are pushing an email client for filtering purposes.
Possibly.
That's all that I could possibly think of. And I have no idea what that would even be called, or I don't know. I don't know.
I've got to know, though. I've never seen this before.
I want to know, too. Our listeners do want to know. Anyway, I think that's it, man. I think that was a great...
That's
a great welcome back episode. Anyway, for IT Babble, I'm Patrick.
I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on the next episode. So keep on babbling, people.